Hare Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavahitamastamavidvishavahai Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Okay, page 51, Sutra 36. The physical body is the chariot, the mind is the charioteer, and the senses are the horses. This chariot, driving this chariot back to the divinity, away from the part of worldly attachments, by the help of divine knowledge and balanced abnegation, is known as retraction. Right? So he's explaining that other side. What does that pulling back mean? What does that renunciation mean? So that retraction means, we could say, you could look at it now, you could say renunciation, that would mean that's something that you should have or could have, but you're giving it up. But what would retraction indicate?
You're actively moving away.
We
already have.
That what is distracting us.
Distracting, but if I retract my statement, what does it mean?
You've already said it.
You said it, but...
But
it was not right.
Yeah.
In other words, you move forward into something that wasn't correct. Right? So when there's retraction, means you've moved into something and you retract because there was a problem. Mm-hmm. You know, the army moved into the air and then retracted, right? Because it was not in the, it was not good, right? So retraction then gives the ideas that you're coming back from some other more normal state. Right? You're going from something that's not right back into something that is. Right? Because you retract, you're not going to go into something else stupid. At least you shouldn't. Right? You know. So then, does that have meaning or is some esoteric meaning to the... Yes.
Serves the purpose of Ayurveda.
I see. Okay.
You got bit.
I see. So it's not some, I say, like a Baroque decoration or something. Okay. Okay, so you understand? So that's retraction. You're pulling back from going farther into material energy, which is unfavorable and unnatural for the living entity, and pulling back to a better situation, you know, which means prema, right? You know, that's always a touch better, yes. Okay. The summary of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary. The body is here called the chariot because it is controlled by the mind, right? Right, because the chariot is something that does something, but it's controlled by something else. So the body is the chariot because the mind is controlling it. Right? The mind is called the charioteer because it controls the senses. Right? It means you have the chariot, and then you have what drives the chariot, but who controls what drives the chariot, that's the charioteer. Right? So he's the controller of the chariot, and the controller of what drives the chariot, the senses. So the mind is the charioteer. The reins then being, you know, intelligence or whatever it may be, or the whole package of the mind, the intelligence, and the false ego, right? That's what's going to be running the chariot. In other words, the subtle body is going to be controlling the gross body. But what powers the gross body into action is the senses. Right? Does that make sense? The senses are called the horses because they pull the chariot of the body here and there. The body moves because of the senses. No senses, you don't go anywhere. Right?
We're talking active and knowledge-acquiring senses as a whole.
Yes, both. Because because you see something, then your legs carry you there, right? You know, so they go together. Because otherwise, if you see it but you can't get at it, then you know, no arm to legs. It goes together. The transcendental soul has entered into materialistic hunting of this material world and is enjoying the results of his actions, right? Because you go out on the chariot and you go hunting. Right? So here again, like an analogy, like you see with Paranjana. But because it's an analogy doesn't mean it's not true. Always remember, if there's something in the Bhagavatam that's allegorical, that doesn't mean it's not true. Right? And that the allegory is being stated, it doesn't mean that it's not real that it's been stated. Right? Bhaktivinoda Thakur here is stating, giving an allegory, right, between the gross and subtle body and the chariot, right, and the activities. But the point is the point is correct, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur exists, and what he said exists. So we can't say, oh, it's an allegory, so this is not real. So we can't say, Paranjana is an allegory, therefore the Bhagavatam things aren't real. No. The story it's not fictitious. It's an allegory in that fiction is you just make it up. It's taken from this and that in the world, but it's not establishing something. Here it's that you can establish the one point through the other, right? So it's a point.
Serves a purpose. Yes,
sort of, yes, like that. It's like logic. Inference means through inference, and you go from what is known to what is unknown, right? But the point is was Narad Muni talking to Maharaj Prachina Barhishat? That was real. And in the conversation, this is what they discussed. So then from that to come to the Bhagavatam, it's just allegories. It's not facts. It's not science. That's erroneous at best. Okay? So here he's using that as the soul goes out on this chariot and goes hunting for sense objects in this world. Yes.
Senses being subtle are using like a vehicle material body.
They're situated on the body, but they're still controlled by the subtle body because they're extensions, right? The extension of the intelligence is the senses, the extension of this of the false ego is the body, right? And then the mind controls both of those. It doesn't have an extension as such, it doesn't have a gross, because the one is passion, one is ignorance, so goodness doesn't technically have an extension. Does that make sense? Yes.
This analogy, identity would be like in the mind.
Yes, because the mind. See, the mind is, technically speaking, the mind is the element, and then subtle aspects of that are the intelligence and false ego. So when you say mind, it also includes those. If one's mind is absorbed in something, that means one's intelligence is also absorbed there, and the ego is absorbed there. Right. So the mind is the controlling element. So it's the central feature when you're dealing with the four kinds of false ego, right? So the what one is easily able to perceive, that's the grossest, so that is the gross body, the five elements, and the false ego. Those two go together, the subtle and the gross of that. So that's on the outer, the outer aspect. Then in from that, then is intelligence and the senses. Right? Then in from that, in the center is the mind. But the center of that is the polluted consciousness. Right? So that's what, if you change the polluted consciousness, you actually change the mind, and it changes because the mind controls the senses, and therefore the body, then everything gets adjusted. So that's why the other egos are mentioned, but what he's trying to get at is the polluted consciousness, that I'm the controller and the enjoyer. Right? Does that make sense? Because even we get rid of I'm not this body, right? But then we're still the senses. We get rid of okay with that. Problem is you get rid of the intelligence also, so once on the path of jnana won't agree to that part. Right? That's why they have problem with the senses. Because the intelligence is connected. This is the interesting part. There's a saying, I can't remember it, but it's a known saying in intellectual circles about, you know, the irony of the intellectual many times is so grossly addicted to sense gratification. Because the intelligence and the senses go together. So if the mind is not improved, then it will be guided in the wrong way. And if it's improved, then the intelligence isn't a problem. You know what I'm saying? Because we take it, he's intelligent, so there shouldn't be any problem with the senses. You know, only the stupid person gets involved with the senses. Like that. No, it's the intelligent person doesn't have the emotions that get in the way of the senses, while the stupid person does. So the foolish person is acting more on emotions, not on intelligence. And so the emotions, being the mind, then control the senses. Right? So the natural thing is someone whose intelligence is more developed, then the intelligence would control the senses. Technically, they can, because the intelligence controls the mind. Right? But the difficulty comes is when the mind is not developed, right? Then there's what's to control the senses. Does that make sense? Right? Because when there's emotions, then there's a sense of good and bad, you know, on social elements. But if the mind isn't the prominent aspect, it's the intelligence, but it's not an improved mind. So therefore, you don't have, you know, social customs and emotions that get in the way of sense gratification. You understand? So that's why it seems contradictory. You know, we would take intelligences with goodness and the minds with the passion. But no, the mind's in goodness. The intelligence is controlled by passion. That's why if the intelligence is then controlled by the transcendental, you know, it's working on that, then it has a better position.
Last year, you mentioned that through transcendental knowledge, it gets the intelligence, which finally will get to the positive consciousness, and then the whole system will change.
Yes. So if on knowledge, you see yourself as the servant of Krishna, not as the enjoyer, you've actually changed the whole system. Right? So you can see with these two things. Proper knowledge, you know, which will give the detachment, and the mind being connected, that results are for Krishna instead of for me, that I'm the enjoyer, right? Then it works. So this point, I'm not the controller and enjoyer, that's how it's working. Because if I'm not the enjoyer, then the results are for Krishna, right? So then one automatically becomes detached. You know, with knowledge you see I'm servant, so that enforces that. Right, so we're saying the same thing, we're just coming at it from different angles, because one angle we're convinced, but still the other 973 are still left. You know, so like that.
A few weeks ago you have mentioned about the mind being transformed.
Yes. Yes, because that's the point. If the consciousness transforms, then the mind, the intelligence, the senses, right? It'll automatically. So the body then becomes spiritualized. The senses become spiritualized. Right? We're still dealing with, the mind is still manifest through the material element of mind. But it's functioning as the spiritual mind. There's spiritual intelligence. You understand? Because it doesn't matter. You know, you have bhoga, it's made out of material energy, but it can be offered to Krishna and it becomes spiritual. So that's what happens. So when we're saying the devotee's body is spiritual, this is what we mean. We don't mean that, oh, you know, there's no death and that won't, you know, all these different things won't get sick. These are just, it functions in that way according to the material energy, you know, I mean by the laws of material energy, in accordance with the Lord's will. The difference is it's the Lord's will rather than it is the reaction to our, you know, good or bad activities. Does that make sense?
Transcendental knowledge is received by intelligence, and intelligence has to act and try to reform the mind.
You can say, but at first, how does it get to the intelligence?
Through senses.
Yes, I mean, it comes through hearing. So that's the point, is it doesn't matter these. If it's connected to the Lord, it works very nicely. If it's not connected to the Lord, it doesn't work nicely. Like, we don't need all this breakdown and analysis if one is transcendentally situated, right? Then, if even these things are there, they'll be used poetically to explain some nice aspect of Krishna's qualities or the situation. Like Madhu Mangal uses it a lot. You know, he'll say, you know, this is like this and that's like that. And, you know, it's just like, you know, what is it? You know, the sun. No, yeah, the sun is. Or maybe he's thinking the moon. I can't remember what he says. You know, the moon is, you know, like the is, you know, very is rising, coming quickly to meet its lover. You know, the night. But and because of this, it's feeling shy, so it manifests that redness. And you know, he'll use like that. He'll break things down, but he'll turn it into poetry. Does that make sense? You know. But here, then, it's poetic. But unfortunately, so that's the thing. The shastras are nice and poetic, but what's behind the poetry is not necessarily so good. You know, it's like poetics about a pile of garbage or something. Sorry.
Ode to trash.
Yes, ode to trash. Yes. Yeah, good work. The returning back of this jiva to his own abode is known as retraction. Right? Means he's entered into this, but he's not, so retraction. So rather than renunciation, like it was showing before, he's defining renunciation. Renunciation means retracting back to one's natural position. It doesn't mean giving this up as if it's, you know, it's just like you, one is in a bad dream, so then one wakes up, that retracts back to his normal state, his conscious state, because in this state he's not really properly conscious, right? The consciousness is covered by the mode of ignorance, so you get all these strange and wonderful situations, right? You know, like that. There are three kinds of retractions. Pertaining to the retraction of the senses, renunciation, asceticism, restraint, sense control, right? Because here is, he's giving some very, very interesting information, is that you take something and when it's applied, you get all these other aspects. Because we'll take it that all these different things are all different separate things that have nothing, you know, there's all these qualities. But, you know, it's just like we see when the love is applied and it takes on all these other form. So retraction, it takes on, when it's the sense, renunciation, asceticism, restraint, sense control, all those different things. But that's all part of retraction connected to the senses. To the retractions of the body, penance, sacrifice, purity, and different types of yoga. Right? Because sometimes penance, asceticism, or renunciation, we can't make the or sacrifice. But one is the body, one is the senses. Right? And retraction of the mind, forgiveness, sincerity, non-stealing, truthfulness, learning. Right? So, in other words, body, mind, and words, being engaged in the Lord's service, that means all those aspects are engaged in trying to please Krishna, but at the same time as they're also retracting from their material engagement. Right? So that's why these different words are used. Now, like that, because... Yeah. Okay. That makes sense, yes.
So, by this, I'll take the balance advancement will be taken to All three,
yes. Because otherwise, yes. Means, of course, one will start where it makes sense. Mm-hmm. But the idea, but that doesn't mean necessarily senses, but, mm-hmm. but you know, the idea is you start, but it should be balanced because it's not more, the senses aren't more austere than the body. You know? It means you're so renounced, you don't keep anything but but the body requires something. The senses aren't eating anything, but the body requires a little bit more food. You know, like that. Or the mind is, you know. Does that make sense? Mm. So you also see is when Manu describes the main elements of Dharma, it includes all these. These are actually what it's dealing with. Right? So we'll take it, as all these good forgiveness, sincerity, non-stealing, truthfulness, learning. Those are all these, but they're only retractions of the mind from the material energy. Because real forgiveness, you know, you can only be forgiving if one's devotional. Otherwise, one has false identities, how one will forgive. Right? Sincerity, if you're doing something for your own purpose, you won't be sincere. Right? Non-stealing means everything belongs to God. So even if you went out and bought it with your hard-earned money, still it belongs to God. Right? Like that. Truthfulness, what is actually connected to Krishna. What's not connected to Krishna is not real. It's not actually truth. You may say it's called facts of this world, but it's not necessarily truth. You know, that's why, you know, the example where the antagonist asked Prabhupada, so if you know, the guru knows everything, so how many windows in the Empire State Building? And Prabhupada looked at him and very coolly said, how many windows in a mirage? Right? You know, it means it's an illusion. So what does it matter how many windows are in it? You know, you can put as many as you want, you know.
Will we be studying Manu Samhita some during this 12
years? Yeah. No, Manu is in the, it's connect, it's in the Bhakti Anuchana okay. degree. Right? It means the first year is the how you say it? Diploma of Divinity. This is Advanced Diploma of Divinity. Then the one we do with the Jiva Dharma and the six systems, that's the Associated Divinity, and that's called Bhakti Anuchana. Like that. So the difficulty is that to go into it the degree that we want to, so we understand its connection, because we're dealing with what we would call, I guess you could say, functional understanding of it, not that you're going to use it. Mm-hmm. When entity comes, if it comes, then we can ask the direct. Mm-hmm. I mean, but it's just like functional grammar means how much you would you're dealing with. It doesn't mean how it's used. Mm-hmm. You know, in this situation, you use like this. It means how it functions, how it relates to itself and functions. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to get this functional understanding of all the Vedic topics. So. It's not that there's a lot of volume of material, it's the depth. So it was originally conceived of as 1 year. It was a full year, but that's when classes would run from September all the way through to May. You know, and all the classes. So there were three classes a day all the way through. But because of the summertime didn't seem to be a popular time to come at this time of day. Like morning, you know, just not quite melt, you know, but by the time you get back and after breakfast, then, you know, everybody's a little puddle on the floor. Very hard to get puddles over here, right, you know, so, like that. So, so then that was cut back, you know, and then the problem of visa, many people can only come, they can stay for the 6 months and all that, so we tried to work within there. So then, but then the problem comes is it didn't leave the proper time for that. You know, because it needs very full attention. You know, some things are only maybe a few days, some things a few weeks, but still it's depth. It's, you know, something like Manu Samhita is quite big. Ayurveda won't be too big because most of it's technical points, but there's still a lot. You know, Nyaya will be quite straightforward. You know, like this. So these different things there'll be, and so it requires more time. So then, now we're thinking to take one full year for it. because otherwise we won't get. But even then, I was thinking about it the other day. Is I'm not even convinced that that will still cover everything nicely. So I'm considering whether it should be worked into the summer after Bor Purnima. You know, so it goes for those 3 years plus that year, and so then it works in. So you get an equivalent of 2 years. You know, just like it's taking 2 years to study Gita. You know, you're talking, you know, all four Vedas, the Brahmanas, Aranyakas, 10 Upanishads, you know, the Pancharatra, your six sets of Puranas, you know, like that, Ayurveda, Stapanaveda, Dhanurveda, Gandharvaveda, Dharma, Artha, Niti, Shastra, Nyaya, yeah. Oh, excuse me, grammar, astronomy, you know, astrology, like that, and ritual.
That's
with the Bhagavatam, the second. Yeah. No, this is all. See, this is all what we call this Shastra Chakshus. It's like a mandala of what we would consider by being knowing this information. Then one could view the Bhagavatam with the proper understanding. Like, because when we say Bhagavatam is the ripened fruit of the Vedic literature, you know, we accept that, and you know, because it's the Paramahamsa literature and all that, so that's all accepted. But we don't necessarily know what all the Vedic it's the ripened fruit of what. We accept it as the ripened fruit, but we don't know the Vedic literature, and therefore when devotees get into these Vedic literatures, much of the time they get distracted. Most of the time they get distracted. You know, it's very rare you find someone who doesn't get distracted. So the idea is that, and so to appreciate how Bhagavatam is the conclusion, because there's many things that Bhagavatam mentions, but it's only giving the concluding element. Because the idea is that the sages there, they already knew all this. You know, so when it mentions a few things about, you know, somebody's chart, astrological chart, you know, everybody can appreciate, wow, okay, cool, you know, because they already know it. You know, or give some examples in Ayurveda, this or that, they don't mean much to us. So the idea is that then one will be able to fully appreciate the Bhagavatam. Like that. Does that make sense? So Shastra Chakshus is that. When you get to the Bhagavatam, you have first six cantos, Brihad Bhagavatam Rita, all these books that are on the Bhagavatam itself, that are studies. Like that. Then the second six, that's when you Sandarbhas and Vedanta Sutra, because those are analytical studies of it. Means the others are also analytical, but they're nice in story form, and you know, it'll be, you get the overview of the thing, but that'll be quite technical. Does that make sense? So that's there. So then, yeah. So it's either, I mean, as it is now, it's one block, so you do 1.5 years of Vedanta Sutra, 1.5 years of Sandarbhas, you know, like that. So, like that, it'll work out. Is that okay? So, yes. Sorry? This is analysis of the Gita. And then, see, in all the courses, they have your, how do I say, Mool Granta, the books that are being studied, the primary books that are being studied, right? Then you have the supplementary works, which are works by the Acharyas, that are, you know, in connection to those works, or will give a better understanding. Does that make sense? So that's, you know, one of the differences in our course of study, is that you're dealing with the main books and the supplementary works. But the supplementary aren't just a few quotes, right? We have the few quotes in the main study, right? But they are studied themselves to give that other perspective of the work. Does that make sense? So you have those two. Then you have the chronological study and the thematic study, right? So they can be either separate or they're non-different from the supplementary works. Does that make sense? Right? So Bhagavad Gita, Nectar, Devotion, Ishapanishad, Upadeshamrita are the primary books within the undergraduate degree. Right? So the first year is chronological, the second, now this year, is thematic. But there's other books to help us understand the essential points of the knowledge. Right? So basically speaking, the Dasamuha. Right? Because that's our essential philosophy. So then the third year does that. Now, because we're approaching Bhagavatam being the end of knowledge, so we should know what is that ocean of knowledge. So therefore, then a year is given for that. Does that make sense? Right? So in Bhagavatam, then the Bhagavatam is the main work, and then like Brihad Bhagavatam, these are the supplementary, but they also simultaneous are the thematic studies. You know what I'm saying? And so the same with the Sandarbhas, the thematic studies. Right? The six Sandarbhas, and each one is taking a major approach, and then the whole Bhagavatam is studied through that. You know, Priti meaning that love for Krishna, Prayojana. The Bhakti means the Abhideya. You know, the Tattva means the position of Bhagavatam, and that the what else? Paramatma. You know, like that is just how the Lord is controlling the creation, doing everything. Does that make sense? So, like that. Does that make some sense? Yes.
And the way body and the senses are taken as the same.
Body and the senses are taken as the same.
And there is a distinction between the direction of the senses and the direction of the body. What is the main principle? Because like sacrifice, you usually sacrifice as well.
But sacrifice, you do that with the body. Right, the penance you're doing with the body. The purity is the body. The body is you bathe it. You know what I'm saying? Different kinds of yoga. You're engaging the body. You know, your karma yoga, your astanga yoga, the body's being engaged. With the senses, renunciation means the senses engage, but it's not engaged for you. Right? Or it's not engaged. Though the body's doing something, but the senses are engaged.
So sacrifice meaning here like a ritual or like an action of renouncing the object of the senses?
Sacrifice means something is being done for someone else's benefit. But means here it means the body is being engaged in it. But the point is because of the renunciation, or you know, restrain or control, therefore the sense is not being engaged for yourself, therefore the body can engage it in someone else's service.
So
it's combined, but we just pick it apart so that we understand the differences. Difficulties, they're growing faster than you guys.
Yeah.
There's more of them. So. Last year there was much less, so then here and there you know, it disappeared. But now it's like there's 70 of them upstairs. So then. Yes, you know. and they're getting older, therefore. Before it was all like that other one is squeaky, so it doesn't bother you. This is all good. So by adopting these methods, the body, the mind, and the senses become properly controlled. And one attains self-realization and the soul's natural function, Krishna Bhakti, flourishes. Right, so body, mind, and words are engaged in the Lord's service, and body, mind, and words are not engaged in the material. Right? So they're engaged in the positive, but they're also engaged in the retraction. Right? Like that. Because you can only do one or the other. The sense can only do one thing at a time. So it's either engaged in your service or in Krishna's service. You can't do both. Right? You know. In Bhagavad Gita 6:20:21, the Supreme Personality of Godhead also says, the stage of perfection is called trance or samadhi, when one's mind is completely restrained from material mental activities by practice of yoga. This is characterized by one's ability to see the self by the pure mind and to relish and rejoice in the self. In that joyous state, one is situated in boundless transcendental happiness. This is always the... because, I mean, of the 70, 20 are new. In that joyous state, one is situated in boundless transcendental happiness and enjoys himself through transcendental senses. Established thus, one never departs from the truth. Right? So truth is part of the mind. So that means it's always engaged in Krishna consciousness, right? So he says, restrained from the material activities. One's mind is completely restrained, so that means it's not involved, so therefore the senses aren't involved, because it drives the senses. Therefore the body is also controlled, so therefore sacrifice purity. Right? So you see is that all these things are stated, and we'll say it's nice words, okay, but they mean exact specific points. Right? They mean specific things. So when Prabhupada's using these specific words, then they're there because that's what the acharyas use. Or he'll use a word that colloquially means that in this way, but then he'll always stick to that. There'll be some variety within it, but it's always using these things. So it's very exacting in how it's explained. So here we can see is the body and the mind and the words are pulled back. Right, from mental activities by practice of yoga, right? So yoga means the different types of yoga, the body again. So you can see is that it's talking about being engaged positively, but at the same time seeing that the negative is not happening. Yes?
In our practice, this describes quite an elevated state.
Yes.
Being relish and rejoice in the self.
Yes. No, it's practice. That's why it's called sadhana bhakti. So that's what's being described here, sadhana, is that because by this, then one, he's saying what you're trying to get to. He says the stage of perfection is called trance or samadhi. So we're already talking about being on the transcendental platform and being fully absorbed in the Lord. So technically what he's describing here is that putting oneself in the middle of the middle stage of bhava, you know, at the point where it becomes starts to become interesting to Krishna, right? So but the point is you know that's what you get to, but as we've been discussing is that all those same elements come all the way down to Shraddha. It's just that how much is developed, that's all. How much faith is there? How much do we appreciate the sadhus, right? Because we see as the Lord's pastime means that full absorption in the associates of the Lord, who are the devotees, right? So they're the sadhus. So that means sadhu sangha is in its purest form when you're in the pastimes, right? The bhajana kriyas means you're performing under the direction of your authority those activities that are correct for your situation in that pastime. Does that make sense? So all these things, you know, they're all there. You're fixed in this now. You're not like before where sometimes you are absorbed, sometimes you're not. Now you're fully absorbed. You become established in your relationship. It becomes what's called means inherited. So it's yours. It won't go away. Does that make sense? You know, the taste is, you know, ever increasing. Your attachment, the ecstasies, all these things. So it's a ongoing process that has these elements within it. But when these elements aren't so focused on all that, then we'll call that the neophyte. And so these elements will stand out more. When it's a little more developed, then we'll call it the madhyama. When it's more developed again, we'll call it the uttama. But it still has these aspects are prominent. It already includes the other ones, but these are where you're working. So from this, then, it's still the same thing. The stage of perfection is called trance or samadhi. So when we're always absorbed in the Lord, that's perfection. So we, how much we can, we try to absorb ourselves in the Lord. Does that make sense? Right? You know, it's like my completely restrained from material mental activities. My practice of yoga. So our mind is absorbed in material energy, but through yoga, it can be pulled out, restrained from that, because when we see it on its own, it's unrestrained. But when we see it in connection to the Lord, then through karma yoga, jnana yoga, jnana, then we connect that to the Lord, so it's restrained. Right? So therefore we practice these things. It pulls it back. Characterized by the ability to see the self by the pure mind. Otherwise we see this, the impure mind is, you know, I'm this body and I'm from this place and I have all these different upadis, right? So that won't be so, that's the impure mind. But the pure mind then sees the self, who we actually are, and all these others as paraphernalia. You know, it's just like when one goes out, then there's one self, there's one's dress, and there's one's accessories, right? So in one sense, they're all the same, but at the same time, you can tell the difference. You know what I'm saying? So it's not that one can't act, you know, because one knows one is not one's handbag. That doesn't mean you can't use the handbag properly. Does that make sense? So that's the thing we worry, but if we give that up and only see the self, then we can't do anything. No, it's actually you can do better. The person who can identify themselves as different can use it better. It's the person who can't, themselves and the bag and this, they can't make it. The model can do really well because they know exactly who they are, how they move, what's the clothes doing, what are the accessories doing. So that's because that platform of knowledge. So if you take that back further to the self, then you'll be able to get rid of the false ego and all these other identities that puts us into the material phenomenon. You know what I'm saying? Because the devotees are pulling back with the idea that I'll become very expert within the material world because it's more prestigious. Right? Bhaktisiddhanta wasn't worried if the movement was considered prestigious or not. It should be understood as right, that we're giving truth. But much of the time, devotees are worried that our society is seen as prestigious. And so that means compromise. You have to do what they think is prestigious, rather than what actually is. Does that make sense? You know, so when one sees the self with the pure mind, then it works very good. Because the self is what's happy. The body isn't known for being happy. Right? The body just kind of like lays there. And if, you know, you don't take care of it nicely, it kind of like tends to like merge back into the other elements, right? You know, it has this nasty tendency, right? You know, but if the soul is there, then, you know, with some focus, then it somehow or another stays a little bit more in a... The atoms stay more manifest together rather than demanifesting and going back into the pradhan, right? Like that. In that joyous state, one is situated in balanced transcendental happiness, enjoys himself through transcendental senses. Because then you're dealing in the transcendental platform. You've crossed the material identity, which is always giving problem to the transcendental. So it's just showing how that's done. You know what I'm saying? So the same points are useful on all levels. Is that okay? Yeah. So you don't have to worry because they've used the word perfection and we're not perfect, so therefore, you know what I'm saying? The principle is the same. You know, especially when they're talking about perfection and all that, because perfection means the spiritual platform, but it doesn't mean prema. Prema is the ultimate perfection. So you'll see as they'll talk about perfection, ultimate perfection. Right? like that. So you'll sometimes see that these differences. The goal, or ultimate goal, you know, or ultimate bhakti, or like that. Because there is devotional, so then there's the ultimate. Like that. Does that make sense? In Bhagavad Gita 6:28, the Supreme Personality of Godhead also says, steady in the self, being freed from all material contamination, the yogi achieves the highest perfectional stage of happiness in touch with the Supreme Consciousness. Right? Steady in the self, so connected to the Lord. Right? So that means he's not being distracted by anything else, so the body, mind, and words. Being freed from all material contaminations, which means from body, mind, and words. So that's why he's steady. The yogi achieves the highest perfectional stage of happiness in touch with the Supreme Consciousness. Right? So again, the material side is free from material contamination and steady because it's connected to the Lord. And he reaches the highest perfectional state. See here he makes the distinction. Because of in touch with the Supreme Consciousness. Right? So here, Supreme Consciousness sound, you know, it works. It's very, the mind, the intelligence likes these kind of things, you know. You're like this kind of intellectual, but the point is Supreme Consciousness is the Lord's consciousness of his devotees. You know what I'm saying? So his element of Bhakti Vatsala and all, that's the Supreme Consciousness. You know what I'm saying? So those then will think they're two different kinds of literatures. No, just one is using one language for one kind of, because this is Upanishads. So it uses Upanishadic language. Right? Bhagavatam is from the Paramahamsas. So it's beyond that. So it'll use, you know, the sweet. Because the Paramahamsas won't mistake the poetry for mundane poetry. Right? Like if you're speaking to Mayavadis, don't speak Bhagavatam, because for them poetry means mundane. But if you speak this, the Supreme Consciousness, they like that, even though their intelligence is mundane. You know, but they can't distinguish. Right? You know, it's like the, can't see the forest for the trees. Right? They can't see what's going on because there's a few trees they're focused on, so they can't see the whole forest. You know?
Okay. Imagine the Supreme Consciousness is a
It can be any in touch with the Supreme, because the highest perfectional stage of happiness is in touch with the Supreme Consciousness. So here then it would be the Supreme Conscious means conscious of the Supreme Lord. But because it says highest perfection, that must mean devotional. The question was, is this Supreme Consciousness, is this, you know, meaning, you know, what is this meaning? Is this Krishna like this? So it's meaning that, but we're taking it as that it's in connection with Supreme, but because it says highest perfectional, it must be devotional. So then here is then what we're talking about is pure unalloyed devotion. You know, it was defined before. Because even in here, our renunciation is to get us to from upaya bhakti to phala bhakti. Right? So therefore steady in the self, being freed from all material contamination, right? That's the retraction aspect, right? And the yogi achieves highest perfection in touch with the Supreme Consciousness. That's the attraction to the Lord, right? So your retraction and attraction. Right? So you're retracting back to the spiritual platform, but at the same time we're attracting ourselves to the devotional platform. Right. So yeah, so it deals with both of these, but it's putting it in the context of the supreme goal, the highest goal, right? Because that's always has to be there. Because we're only talking about the process of sadhana, but we don't know what is the goal we're trying to get to, right? Then we'll get distracted and think just following the rules nicely is the goal. That is the devotion. Right? Because that's what your materialistic devotees are doing. Right? They're following the rules nicely, or at least seemingly nicely. But the point is that they do these rules, that's why they're advanced, and that's why you have to listen to them, or they're the guru, or you have to give them donations, or like this. But it's the attraction to Krishna and retraction. That's why he's saying you can tell the attraction by how much retraction is there. Right? So that's the... Yeah. Bhakti is the ultimate fruit of all these yoga sadhanas. Right? So karma, jnana, jnana means karma is body, jnana means intelligence, jnana means mind. So all these yogas means, these three yogas means that they're being retracted, but they're being connected. Right? In Bhagavad Gita 6:47, the Supreme Personality of Godhead says, "And of all yogis, he who always abides in me with great faith, worshiping me in transcendental loving service, is most intimately united with me in yoga and is the highest of all." Right? Because there it's the of all the yogis who is connecting, the connection on the platform of attraction to Krishna, that's the highest, because the other ones are dealing with the conditioned nature. Right? Because one who's fully attracted to Krishna, he is engaging body, mind, and words, but it's not a separate endeavor. He doesn't have to pull them back from anywhere. Is that what I'm saying? Yes.
So in this sense, we can say that there is little retraction from the level of Rujiyam.
You could say, I mean, it's all your bulk, gross things are there, but still there is some, you know, distraction, otherwise why are you still here? But you could say, yes, there is very dynamic and it'll be very minimal. You know, probably yeah. Is that okay? But still, it's not that one still has to be careful. Right, because otherwise all these nice qualities that come from the transcendental position, still they're just inherent qualities. It's still Saguna Brahman, but you won't have to bring it to the point of Bhagavan. Right? As we were saying, Jarabharat, he's liberated, so he's on the Brahman platform. Right? He's also a devotee, but the quality of his compassion for the soul, right, and just according to its how it views itself, wasn't technically connected. But the platform that he's functioning from is on the liberated platform. So then it becomes a distraction. So it still has to be careful. But it's very subtle. You know, so it's not, you could say by Ruchi all the gross things are gone. But still subtle is still to be dealt with. That. But it's very quick, right? Because there's a taste, so there's that drive, you know. Someone's supposed to do something, it's slow to get done. If he wants to do it or he has a taste for it, it gets done very quickly.
So then, like those ordinary activities are like saturated with the taste and this positive meditation and positive cultivation, so they are coming more in line with the first.
In reference to Ruchi.
Yes.
Yes, you could say is that the primary element, that will be more strong. But it doesn't mean that the other elements aren't dealt with. But because when steady in devotional service, that's just the normal practice. So that's just habits. You don't have to focus on that. You focus on the Ruchi. Right, you know, but we see like Nishtha, you're focusing on that steadiness that has come from the purity of retraction. You know, that stage of retraction has come to the point where now one is steady in the devotion. The distractions aren't so strong that you're not regular in your devotional practices. So the focus is there. You know, while before that the focus was on retraction. You know, does that make sense? Yeah, so just like that, because that's why these distinctions are made. Otherwise, we'll compare that the attraction and retraction are equal. You know, they have the same purpose, but attraction is actually the main principle. Retraction is just necessary, because otherwise, you know, it means that endeavor or focus that is causing retraction, I mean, that is causing a material distraction, that if it's removed from that, that can be applied to attraction to Krishna. Right?
So retraction in a sense is removing obstacles for the attraction to work.
Yes, yes. Retraction is a part of the upaya bhakti because it helps the blooming of bhakti. Many people are in deep illusion and think that shankhya, yoga, karma, tapasya, etc. bring in separate fruits. They will be enlightened by the concluding verse of 8th chapter of the Gita noted below. They will be enlightened.
Ambitious.
Yeah. A person who accepts the path of devotional service is not bereft from the results derived from studying the Vedas, performing austere sacrifices, giving charity, or pursuing philosophical and fruitive activities. At the end, he reaches the supreme abode. Right? Because all of them are just part of the elements used in retraction. Right? And so from all these different things, actually they're meant for the same. Now, if you're doing them as separate from the Lord, then it seemingly gives different results, but it still gives the same results, material entanglement. Right? The other one gives, freedom. So it's the same. Studying the Vedas is so that you know Krishna, you know what to do. Performing austere sacrifices is for, giving the results to Krishna. Giving in charity, then it's for, being given to Krishna and that, or being, distributed to unfortunate living entities, who are a connection to Krishna. Pursuing philosophical and fruitive activities. The philosophical is to elevate oneself to the transcendental platform. The fruitive activities are give facilities for performing action and getting results, but those actions and results are for Krishna. So technically there's no difference if you see it in connection to Krishna. If you don't, then, that's the point, is that we're taking it as completely separate things. But that's the contamination of gyan, is we think that material is one thing, spiritual has to be the opposite, when actually it's not. Is material is when you use the spiritual, not for spiritual. Right? In other words, this world belongs to God. It's Brahman. So actually, technically, it's spiritual. Right? We didn't say devotional. We said spiritual. But because we're not seeing it in connection with the Lord, therefore it acts materially. Does that make sense? Now, when you see it in its actual position, then it removes the material. But the point is God is a person. We have a relationship with Him. So actual spiritual means devotional. Right? Just being not materially situated, being on the spiritual platform, isn't actually spiritual. It is, but it is as a concept. But in reality, spiritual means devotion to Krishna. Because that's actually acting on, it's dynamic. The transcendental platform is dynamic. You as an individual are acting and getting results and interacting with others. Does that make sense? The monistic process is also part of retraction, by the help of which the retraction of the mind may be achieved. Right? Monistic means here, we don't mean Mayavad. Monistic means we mean the Brahman understanding. You're just seeing that. But what we are talking about, Sagun Brahman, not Nirgun Brahman. That's basically useless. That's an aberration. Right? Because the Shastras are only going to talk about God. So as Bhagawan, Paramatma, or Brahman. So that means this is personal, the whole thing. People misinterpret and come up with Nirgun Brahman. Right? But it's not a reality. That's a mundane concept. Right?
When I say Nirgun, it's only when you think it's not material.
Say again?
Nirgun Brahman.
Uh-huh.
The concept of it's not material.
It's not material, but so it just means it's the opposite. So that means that this has quality, it has to not. So it means it's actually an uneducated. So they're simply projecting that there's something there. It's the same like the scientists and that. They have their formulas, they project what they think should be there. But they don't actually know. You know what I'm saying? They just go by what they can understand, their projection. They say light doesn't have to travel in a straight line. You have these little lamps that have these little bent little things like that. So light can curve. So as far as they know is where some planet is, it could be on the opposite side. But because of the way the light's moving and who knows what bouncing off of different things, then you get it from this side. So they can go by that, but they'll say this is fact. But even according to their own philosophy, it's not necessarily fact. It just hasn't been proven to be not true. That's all.
Yeah, actually one physicist, Richard Feynman, he has actually made kind of empirical proof of Krishna through the way light particles react. He just didn't realize it.
I see.
I have a book at home. It's quite interesting.
Oh, okay. Maybe you should write him and tell him, or he's dead.
Yeah. Right. It's about the transparency of light, which particles go through the light and which bounce off.
Okay.
So you can see it kind of yourself, but also what's on the other side. There's no way of, somehow it chooses. There's no way to figure
out. Okay.
Yes.
The term nirgun. We do use nirgun, but that means there's no material qualities. When we say Krishna's nirgun, that means no material qualities. Right? But when we say Brahman, that's not nirgun, that's sagun. Is if it's, how would it be Brahman? Brahman means you have to be able to identify it, but how do you identify something unless there's some quality? Because if we say it's the oneness, it's the eternity, it's that, these are all qualities, but they're so foolish they don't understand their, but they'll say they're not spirit, you know, they're confused. They're a confused bunch, you know, which is sad because they're so intelligent. You know what I'm saying? You know, this last, I mean, I think he just died some years back, but the big Shankaracharya in South, Kamakoti Pito. I think he could speak like 20 languages and stuff like that. He was so intelligent. Like that. So intelligent. Like that. They know all the shaktas. Because these lines, it's like the kid when they pick him, then he's got like 20 pandits that teach them. And these are all the best in their line. Whoever's the best in, you know, the different things, that's what they'd be learning from them. And then you start from when you're young until, you know, you're in the seat, so you can be quite old, you know. So super intelligence. You know, they don't have to worry about, you know, anything else. There's no public opinions or this or that. So they just learn the shastras and all that. But at the same time, they're very good at the material knowledge also. You know, because that's all they do all day. You know what I'm saying? So it's sad that such volume of intelligence is lost to such foolishness, you know, philosophically, especially when they pride themselves in being very philosophical. Okay.
It's not befitting for a scholar like you to be splashing water.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. He was the biggest. I just heard, was yesterday, a discussion that he's the one that brought Navanyaya to Navadvip. Because they keep it very close-knit, and the books on it, no, they won't let anyone read. So he went there, and he learned the Navanyaya, but that, you know, so then he's able to deal with the books. But they won't let anybody take the books or copy them. But his memory is so good, he could remember all the books, so he came here and wrote them down. But I guess from being there, he became distracted by their philosophy and all that. And then, because they became so upset when they found out that he had actually done that, they were threatening to kill him. So it was unsafe to stay in Mayapur. So the king in Puri offered that he could come there and he would give him facility and protect him. So that's why he went to Puri. But it seems that in that process he'd become distracted from the Vaishnavism into the monism. So he was smart. The monistic process is also a part of retraction, by the help of which the direction of the mind may be achieved. Right? Prabhupada mentions, for the monist and the devotee up to the platform of liberation, technically this element of retraction is the same. The difference being is the monist doesn't know about the other part of bhakti, which is the attraction to the Lord. Right? So actually they're following the devotional process, but they don't know it, and they only take the one half, so they only get up to liberation. Right? Because karma, jnana, everything is actually part of bhakti. That's why when you're following bhakti, devotional service, there's no lack in that you don't get the benefit of everything else. Right? Because all those things are actually part of devotional service, at least the sadhana bhakti. Right? So they're part of the process, but we see them as separate. So that's why we endeavor for them separately. But it's still devotional service, right? It's just like when you take love and apply it in a different way, it takes on that nomenclature. When you take devotional service and apply it in a different way, right? When you apply service rendered, but it's not for pleasing Krishna, it's for pleasing yourself, it's called fruit of activity. Like that. Does that make sense? So all it is that devotional service is being misapplied. Right, but because it's being misapplied, we call it by something else. You know, we don't, you know, you understand? So, you know, when the love is misapplied, we call it lust, because then it's very easy to identify and it takes on that quality. We say, well, it's the love of the transit, then we don't catch it. You know? In Srimad Bhagavatam 12.5, 11 to 12, Srila Sukadeva Goswami gives his final instruction to Maharaj Parikit. Because right, after this, he basically gets up and goes back to the forest. Right. You should consider, I am non-different from the absolute truth. The supreme abode and that absolute truth, the supreme destination, is non-different from me. Thus, resigning yourself to the supreme soul, who is free from all material misidentifications, you will not even notice the snake bird Takshaka when he approaches with his poison-filled fangs and bites your foot. Nor will it see your dying body or the material world around you, because you have realized yourself to be separate from them. Right? So here Bhaktivinoda Thakur is pointing out that it's the same, I'm non-different from the absolute truth. I'm small, he's great. But it's the same, I'm non-different there. The body is separate. Right? I am different from the body, but I'm non-different from the Supreme. Yes, yes.
Philosophical
adjustment, but you speak about it's directly the philosophy. That's what we're saying, is that we don't have a problem talking to anybody anywhere about, you know, like that, because we have this process, right? Everybody loves the monistic process. We got it. We're the ones that have monism, right? Because we understand it's Sagun Brahman, it's Krishna. It's just his all-pervading good qualities. That's what Brahman is. God is so perfect that the effulgence of his qualities is just pervading everything. Right? But it's his qualities. But the point is we're one with that. We have no connection with the material world. Right? The supreme abode, he is the supreme abode. We have connection there. Right? So we're not part of here. So therefore the material, the situation and the body, as that dissolves, then there'll be no problem. Right? So that's his point, is that from that you're not going to be disturbed here. Right?
He says you should think like this and then you will not be affected. Meaning that, you know, it's easier to, you know, it's not so, it takes a lot of.
This is 12th canto. Right? He didn't say this in first. He gave the information in the second canto. He starts with this information, now he closes with this information. Right? But the point is that all this element of retraction is only to develop that love for the Lord. Right? Because it's inherent in, if you understand, I'm non-different from the absolute, the supreme bode and the absolute, this is non-different from me, then you understand is that you're not connected with here, you're only connected with Krishna. You know, and his supreme abode. He is the supreme abode. And he's his pastimes, his name, form, quality, and pastimes. That's what I'm connected with. So non-different meaning I'm always absorbed in those. So they're not different from me. You know, and I'm not different from that because I'm always absorbed in serving them. You know what I'm saying? So these are, you know, very elevated aspects. But it has that, the monistic process is part of retraction. It pulls one out. Right? but the attraction element is more on the person, and that the rasa that's exchanged. You know what I'm saying? Already there means? Yes. Yes. But that means otherwise, why was there 10th canto? Right? And then having done that, you've brought yourself up to that. Then you give all those fine technical points how to make sure that you're following the first 9 cantos properly in the 11th canto. Right? Just like the fine points in the 13 through 18 is showing, you know, what is there in the first 6. Does that make sense? But the central portion is the you know, about Krishna as a person. So the 10th canto is the central point. But at the same time, Bhagavatam is so perfect that even the first 9 cantos is all about the Lord and his pastimes. Right? It just wasn't the most intimate pastimes. So Gita then is leaving all that aside. It's being touched on, but it's directly talking about the person here. But here it's about the person, not about his position. You know, the name, form, or qualities. Here it's talking about his pastimes. You know, so it's giving the same information, but on that level of pastimes. Does that make sense? So the point is the retraction and attraction are used simultaneously. You can only be attracted if there's retraction. Retraction only has meaning if there's attraction. Because materialists technically can't retract. They're following the process, but they never actually get fully retracted. They don't get actually back, because the natural position of the soul is not, I'm the controller and enjoyer. That's still on the material side. Right? Just nothing's manifest yet. Right? So if one comes to the Brahman platform, one still thinks I'm the controller and enjoyer. Right? I am Brahman, you know, therefore the Brahmananda and all that. Then they're still material, actually. They haven't retracted fully. Retract fully means I'm not the controller, not the enjoyer. So there's a source, there's a supreme source of my happiness, there's a supreme source of the potency. So that is the natural, my natural position of direction of my affections and all. That's the neutral position. Right? So the material is seen, but it has no interest. And the spiritual is devotional is seen, and there is interest. Right? Then one moves forward from there on cultivating the mood of those devotees in the line of one's attraction. Does that make sense? So it's the same principle. Okay? Yeah, because he's also known, he says, the body and then the material world. Because the material world is just an extension of the body. Because how you perceive the world is through your identification with the body. You don't identify with the body, there is no material world. Right? Because the world is seen in relation with your body. That's why when you say the field, they say the body. But that means the body and everything else. Similarly, in Bhagavad Gita 18:54, the Supreme Personality of Godhead explains the result of the monistic process. One who is thus transcendentally situated at once realizes the Supreme Brahman. He never laments nor desires to have anything. He is equally disposed to every living entity. In that state, he attains pure devotional service to me. So in that state, then he's able to attain pure devotional service. Right, so we're working here is on the lower level. Okay, he's situated, and then he'll be moving forward. But if we talk about where he's actually on the platform of Brahma-Bhuta, right, then that means it's from that state he's fully absorbed and he's equally disposed to every living entity, so he can interact with the Lord's associates properly. Right, like that. Then he'll be able to, in that association, attain pure devotional service. So here, pure meaning that unalloyed bhakti, right? But on the platform we're looking at is nishta, means pure devotional service, right? But on this, then it means we can go from that neutral state, you know, of being nishta in bhava, to, does that make sense? to prema, which is would be pure. You know. So here again, also transcendentally situated. He's transcendentally situated. So that could, we could say is, you have materially situated, transcendentally situated, and then devotionally situated. You know, that would make the, that would probably make it easier to understand those levels. Because otherwise you generally take transcendental to mean devotional, right? There are many types of retractions described by the sages. It is not necessary to follow all of them. If the essential retractions are followed, they will help the aspirant. In Bhagavad Gita 12:10-11, the Supreme Personality of Godhead tells Arjuna, if you cannot practice the regulations of Bhakti Yoga, then just try to work for me, because by working for me, you will come to the perfect stage. If, however, you are able to work in this consciousness, then try to act giving up all results of your work and try to be self-situated. Right? So this is after he said, you know, just surrender. Right? So then if not, then you do, because these are the ways to retract Bhakti Yoga by all the regulations and that, then that will create, because by that will come all the knowledge and renunciation. If not, you know, then just try to work for me. So then within the Varanasrama, so you try to do either you're serving those within the Pancharatra, you're following the Vedic principles, you're doing the work for Krishna, it's nice karma. So that's also then a retraction. Right? And then from that, nice karma will bring one to the perfectional states, because devotional service and nice karma are the same. Right? Because nice karma means the results for someone else. So nice karma, you generally think of, I'm giving up the result for someone else. You know, the sacrifice. But devotional service is automatically for Krishna's benefit. So it's automatically nice karma. So if you work for Krishna, then you'll get the same result. Right?
And it, from the essential retractions.
Say again?
If the essential retractions are followed, they will help the retractions.
What are essential retractions? That's what he's giving example of now, because so many are there. You know, there's sages, you know, standing on their toes out in the forest somewhere as a means of retraction. But these aren't. So these are here. The regulations of Bhakti Yoga. Then if not, then you try to, you know, nice karma. If not, then you know the sakam. Like that, you know, and then you're trying to be self-situated. You're trying for spiritual realization, but you may be attached to the fruits of the result, but you're giving them to Krishna. So all these are the retractions we use, right? So in other words, the regulations of devotional service, and then nice karma, sakam, like that. This is he doesn't take it to the next verse, so he doesn't consider being a pious guy and opening hospitals, you know, overly retractive. Yes.
So in that sense, that example, pious would be giving the last.
That's after this, but at least you're giving up the results of things. So it looks like devotional service where you're giving up the results. So you're situating yourself in sacrifice, right? You're performing your duties properly according to Varnashram. You're giving in charity. So these things are happening, but because those are actually meant for devotional service, then that person will be pious. He may be able to take up devotional service. So if he can't do that, these do that. So you have somebody, he comes, he does something with the temple, but he can't really get really involved in that. So if he goes on with his philanthropic work and all that, then that's nice. It keeps him pious. So then at some point, then it may be that he'll again have an opportunity to look very seriously at devotional service, and he might be able to take more seriously next time. Right?
My question is, under that is cultivation of knowledge?
Under that, yes. Cultivation of knowledge means this monistic element. Right? Like that. I don't really think that they're recommending, Krishna's recommending Mayavad, right? Because Mayavad is actually, It's atheism presented using Vedic evidence. That's all. So the Vedic literatures don't support atheism. Right? There's another term. What is it? Agnostic.
something with an A.
Agnostic?
No, agnostic, but no, there's for something else, meaning that they're theistic, but it's not, they're not understanding Bhagawan. So that's the shortcoming. The six schools. There's a term.
Astic.
Astic, yes. They're all astic. Right. So. Yeah. Does that make sense? So there's understanding of the Supreme, just that they're not too worried about it. You know, they're worried about their material or spiritual result, like that. So therefore, they're mundane. Okay. The conclusion is that the retraction of the body, mind, and senses should be thoroughly achieved by any of the genuine methods of retraction. Okay? So one should do that. And what that means in connection with attraction for Krishna. Otherwise, it doesn't have any meaning. Right? So that's already been established. Now we can look at details of retraction, because if we haven't, they'll always be, no, but you know, what about Krishna? So we've already established that it only has meaning in connection with Krishna. Now we can discuss it. Because otherwise, if we haven't discussed all what was before, how do we sit there and go, the monistic parts is also part of retraction, right? If you went into just, you know, a assembly of devotees and brought out this point, you would have a lot of difficulty, because they won't be able to understand the principle, what he's meaning, what the acharya is meaning. Right?
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaur Prema.